But going back to what I know, what we were talking about earlier on today, and that is, you know, it is up to us to make response and to trigger what the divine can then do for us, rather than look to the divine to do it for us. And it don't work like that, you know. It's a cooperative process. Okay, I want to move on. So more generally, redemption is the idea that every person can be and will be redeemed or saved at some point, whenever. Ultimate redemption, and so on. It raises big questions, of course. The old chestnut of, is hell eternal? Okay? That's not an easy question to actually answer glibly. Okay? It's no good saying, oh, it couldn't be forever, if you haven't actually thought about what it is that might make a hellish state endure and endure and endure, if not worsen. Okay? Even though the Lord don't want anyone to go there. Ever. You know? You have to think these sort of big issues through.
There.
Sorry?
I said there.
There.
I want to go there.
Don't go there. In spatial. Sorry. It's all I've got. Is hell something eternal in itself? Is hell in some particular person possibly a never-ending situation? Are only certain people saved, and I know I'm using another word here than redeemed, I'll come back to that in a moment, taking ultimate redemption as true, you know, everybody enters bliss, for want of a better word, taking ultimate redemption as true, is this desirable and is it in line with the overall divine will? You know, is that what the Lord really wants? He might want it, but is it what the Lord wants in terms of management of the whole process of never-ending bringing of more and more people into eternal freedom and life and so on? And would you, as you now are, would you greatly and genuinely appreciate an end to every tension and struggle whatsoever? If you can contemplate that. You know? No nagging thoughts, no fluctuation in love. You know, all that's gone and you are, you know, in blissing it out. Christianity, a quick point here. Christianity, you know, what, why and how are we different from mainstream Christianity? Well, here's one way I sort of feel we are. Mainstream Christianity blurs the idea of redemption and salvation by saying it's actually dependent on handing your life over to Jesus, who died on the cross, and saving you from your sins by his blood. Okay? Jesus Christ redeems you and saves you as you come into that belief. By contrast, Swedenborg keeps a pretty clear distinction between the two and talks about redemption historically. He doesn't only talk about it historically, but when he talks about it historically, he says that redemption is when Christ was in the world, God in the world, what he did in the world redeemed the situation as it was then, and brought about the guarantee of all-time spiritual freedom. So you have the imagery of the devil with the foot of Christ holding it down, keeping that situation in place by the work that he did while he was in the world. And that is redemptive. What is saving, Swedenborg says, is not just believing that, but actually entering the process of work and life that you're now able to do because redeeming has guaranteed you your spiritual freedom to follow that path and put your life right. So it's different from the mainstream Christianity. I think I'll move on. I think I'll just move on to the models now. First of all, I came across, this is not my model now, this is something I came across on the internet. I came across a fascinating idea that we're actually two people. This is a version of eternity. We're actually two people, two minds, a good mind and a not good mind, a high mind and a low mind. And when we die, heaven and hell is a binary division. Okay? So that all our good being goes to heaven, and all our bad being and states go to hell. And that's separated out and becomes two dimensions, hell, heaven, and hell. And we're in both of them. Now, you know, I looked at that and I thought, where's the grain of truth in that? And there is a grain of truth, of course, and that is that we are incomplete and we fluctuate between states. But that was an answer to the finality of needing to arrive at an ultimate closure. Okay?
Would it be the expression that we always retain the hellish potentials within us forever?
Sorry?
Would it be that we always retain the hellish potentials within us forever? We never actually finally shed them as a complete, you know, they're never there anymore?
What, this model or... Yeah.
The grain of truth in that model.
Grain of truth.
The grain of truth would be that, yes, that's right, that we would actually still be in the process of something which is like remission of sins, yes, as opposed to forgiveness, wiping out of sins, yes, you see. So, the grain of truth, but of course it's a pretty sort of concocted answer that there's a Joe in heaven and a Joe in hell. Yeah. I don't want to go into it too much, but are they aware of each other? Or is it just how, you know, divine need has separated it out and so on? But it's, you know, there's a committee who are actually, you know, processing this stuff and...
Big one's enough.
Sorry, to name
things. Oh, I don't know. But, you know, there's this sort of group that's into binary salvation.
Okay,
my new model. The old model first. The old model is not the very old model. Medieval, you know, those who've done more than half good deeds go up and the others are cast down. Biblical language, note. Biblical language, as David was saying. The traditional model, heaven and hell being states of mind, become our eternal state, ultimately, once and for all.
Not both together, one.
Yeah, one or the other, ultimately, fully.
Yes.
Okay? So in a way, that suggests there is... We say, no, it's not a place, but it suggests that there's an environment which is pure heaven and an environment which is pure hell, in that sense. Because you're also bringing in affinity and community, which, of course, I know can be understood more than spatially and so on, but it's very suggestive of that kind of distinction of heaven and hell being separate from each other in that sense. Heaven and hell progressively become our eternal state expansively. In other words, we become more and more heavenly, more and more hellish. And that's sort of backed up. Oh, so I have to go back to the first one and say that, you know, this ultimate state is a kind of nice idea when you meet the, to me, slightly dubious statement or current belief among Swedenborgians that is a little bit of a cop-out in a way when they say, well, actually, those in hell think they're in heaven. Okay? Because they really want to be there. They're not there because they've been sent there. It doesn't work like that. They're there because they want to be there, and they actually feel it's heaven. Well, okay, but...
there's a lot of punishments go on there, still.
Yeah, a lot of restriction, frustration, in-the-face retaliation is in the energy of that state of being. Okay? It's very arguable as to whether, you know, people actually would get sucked into that to the extent that that way of life becomes preferable to, you know, real freedom and so on. Then you have all sorts of questions. This is all full of questioning, I know.
You've got to be able to recognise it.
They won't be able to...
To be able to change, you've got to be able to benchmark. And,
oh, yes.
And yeah. So it's from where you are, what you see,
yeah.
Where you can go to. But if you don't see, you can go anywhere else. That's where you can.
And who is going to actually engineer that, you see? This is where the thinking through of reformation and regeneration and... come back to these statements about, you know, if you don't do it in this life, you cannot do it after death. Wow. You know, why not? And what is it about this life that is so absolutely essential to do it here, because you can't do it after the death of the body? Okay.
Could I just ask?
Yes, Jan.
Does that mean... Someone spoke earlier about the distance away from the Lord in heaven as to being a state of closeness or further away. Do I understand that that closeness and further away can shift while you're in heaven? And if that is the case, that sort of does seem to...
Some sort of a fluctuation of state.
Yes. So there must be a...
similar
fluctuation. Tipping point at which... And it's almost the medieval up or down. There's a tipping point that gets you in the gate. Oh, sorry. But there's an ability to at least improve. But there must be some sort of benchmark, which I think you said earlier... because there is still room for improvement there. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite as cut and dried as nothing, if you don't do it, or the totality of it here, then you can't improve it there. Am I right in saying that? That there is still room for growth and...
Absolutely.
And growing closer to God.
Yes.
So in that case, what... then we need to look at what that tipping point is for each one of us to...
Here.
To get us in the gate to start with.
Okay, here. Okay, I think I hear you. Okay, what is it about here that is a tipping point that is going to set up the ability
yes.
there to keep on growing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just add one thing to this statement of progressiveness, which is very time-based in one sense, but it's sequence. And that is Swedenborg's statement that with those who are in good as their life's delight, strong temptations and attacks on their delight fall away. They're no longer temptable to that extent. Whereas those whose ruling love is evil, for want of a better word, the converse happens where conscience and realization of what is true is taken to the sides and put to sleep. So with the good, it's temptation. With the evil, it is conscience, which is... So the people are in a conformed state. Okay? That's in their being. But there is always, there's always room for growth and development. And the changes of state, the fluctuations, and I see the angelic life as being quite energetically self-checking. And when an angel comes into, and I can't talk about how long an evening state, as Swedenborg terms it, how long that lasts, it may be a few seconds, I don't know, but they catch the thought and grow more able to quickly deal with it.
More resolute in their
resolution.
Aim.
So in the sense of shortening those states, I can see that they will always remain, they'll always be part of that, but there is expansion of what you actually prefer and choose actively to be more like, and you quickly see the opposite of that and deal with it by spotting it, whereas we can tend to linger in not good stuff for a pretty long time until we say, do something to get you out of this, because we're in a sluggish state relatively.
I think, and I don't know if this is part of the modelling, but what I've found interesting is the idea that the difference between being in the body and out of the body, your objective reality when you're out of the body is such that you are surrounded by everything that's agreeable to your state. So in a sense, you are... there's nothing that really challenges you in your external environment.
You're very comfortable. It's expressing your internal environment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you look at life here, we're thrown into a world where we are constantly coming up against challenges at the most physical kind of level, the most external level. And it's that hitting these challenges, this world does not conform to what we want necessarily. Mm. And that gives the opportunity for reflection and self-examination. When you hit something that doesn't agree with your state, you have an opportunity at that point, and it occurs like that. That's like a shock, bang! Like a realization can occur, and so a different direction can be taken in terms of our inner life state. But the opportunity for that, without the body and the physicality of the material world, is lessened.
Yes, not totally different, but it's lessened in that
everything, because everything is moulded to, you know, like they talk, it's almost sponge-like. You acquire, in terms of your, because we are our love, and what happens is that when we put the body off and that most external a part of our mind is quiescent, then our love basically draws in everything that confirms it. Mm. So, and that forms who we are.
Mm. Almost like a you know, virtual reality, except it isn't virtual. It's true reality, goggles, you know, helmet. And we're interpreting, and we are then creating, that's what I'm hearing you say, David, we're actually creating, not being set up with, but we're actually creating more conforming surroundings of our calm reality.
Yeah, so I'm not sure where it was, but it came out at the last seminar. There's a quote in the writings which talks about the fact that the elements of, I think it's from a memorable relation in conjugal love, but it talks about the fact that in the difference, it talks about the difference between what is the objective reality of spirits and angels, and what forms the objective reality of people on Earth. And there is much, and it would appear, there is a much stronger influence of divine correspondences at the physical material level, whereas in the at the spiritual level, the correspondences are more in a, well, are totally in accordance with the mental state of the person. Whereas here, the reason our world doesn't transform as I shift in my states is because the divine has set a very concrete reality with, you know, the trees and the gardens, and, yeah,
which is a,
and it doesn't shift,
which is a safe environment for us to be private, for one thing, and private, and then choosing as I choose in myself, the world and the way it appears continues on the same to my senses and to our collective senses generally.
Yeah.
Otherwise you would impose suffering.
That's right.
And because you have a constant in this whole wilderness state, you would be constantly in that state.
So the other thing it does is that it reinforces the principle of as if of self. So if I want to build a house, I have to work, earn money, buy the materials, get the tools, build the house. I have to physically go about doing that. It's as if of myself. Whereas in the spiritual world, for an angel, their habitation is generated by the Lord, and they are aware that it's the Lord that's generated it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas here, it's not so obvious. And so you build the sense of sense of as if of self and the apparent choices that flow from that.
I like what David said, but on top of that, of course, is that there's a fundamental difference between those that have an acceptance of something greater than themselves and moral absolutes to focus on and to have benchmark their own self with, to see how they can improve and what can they do to better others or for the purpose or for the service of others, as opposed to people that reject that. And it's not that as if of self, it is, well, it is I am, replacing the I am with myself. And therefore there is no outside influence that can drive that person, you know, to change their state.
They're shutting it off.
They've completely blocked it off.
Right.
And that's a choice that's made. It's not imposed. So you're still in control of that. But
yes.
And I think that I haven't read a lot of these experiences, but I know one or two that I've read where people have wanted from the hells, have wanted to go to heaven to see what it is. Mm-hmm. And they're allowed to do that. Mm-hmm.
And temporarily.
Completely protected.
And they're just in agony because it does not agree with them. And so, I mean, that's obviously maybe a cop-out to sort of say that, but put all of that together, it gives you a very, very clear picture of what is happening.
Mm. Okay. I've got a thought, Julian, and it might be heretical. It might sound heretical, but...
Go for it.
If the Lord's aim is to build a heaven of angels from the human race, if redemption is permitted and preserved for all to access, if the divine word is for us to see the way, find the way, be guided in the way, to see the truth, to discover the truth, have the influx of it, then I don't imagine it would pay the divine to say, hey guys, you've got forever, even after you die, you know, really, it doesn't matter. You can start from scratch when you... We wouldn't have enough... I mean, most people, I don't imagine, would have a lot of motivation to do something about their state right now. And there is a danger that if it was presented in that way, even though that may be the truth, I'm not sure if it is, but I suspect it may be. If that was the truth, there's no point in presenting it that way to people because people are going to fall asleep in their state, and there's already enough of that, right? It doesn't aid the divine to reach that goal if it's presented that way. And these are, to me, they're like the cherubim with the flaming swords who are protecting the way. They're also, in a sense, saying you're not actually allowed to see the entire reality because if you do, you'd stuff it. You know, you wouldn't work.
Too soon.
You wouldn't do that as of self, but you would leave it all up to God and recline back, and you wouldn't put a hand out like Adam in Michelangelo's painting.
Yeah.
I
can relate to that. I think one of the cop outs of the new church, in a surfacey understanding, is when people read that, you know, the Lord regenerates us, okay, and bringing space and time into a little bit, they say, great, it's all going to happen anyway. He's regenerating me because he wants to regenerate me like nothing. So if he's intent on doing that, he's got the knowledge and the skills and the time and the ability to do that, and you know, I'll just carry on.
It's slacking off a bit.
Well, of course, the as if of oneself, but attributing it to the Lord conjunction, is lost sight of in that quick fix.
Of course. Would we really make the effort of going six times around Jericho if we knew that was the truth?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying, really. Yeah.
Yeah, we'd probably hitch up here.
Perhaps. Or just wait for the rest to come around.
Just wait for the Lord to tumble.
I remember that Jewish fellow who gave a talk here, and he said, you know, as Jews, we argue with God because God is the one who's expecting us to come to him. And I think it was something along those lines. So, you know, we're entitled to argue with him about it. Well, you're the one that's asking us.
God loves us to argue with him. Ask and it shall be given to you. Keep on asking, it could be given to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, for goodness sake, take me on. Did you want to say something, David? Because you were starting and then...
Yeah, I know, I did, didn't I?
I can't remember.
Okay, so, you know, purpose of creation, final aim... of creation is a heaven of angels for the human race, and the divine cannot and will not deviate from that goal for every and each created person. That is what drives the divine, the ultimate of creation. Okay, so if you step outside of that as a perceived goal, it won't be online with what happens, Philip.
A means that God uses, or the means that God uses, in His divine providence, which is the governance of the whole universe is through use. Use, we've all got to be useful in this life, one way or another. And this use follows you into the afterlife as well. I mean, you've got to be useful there too. The whole structure, it depends on use. And even the evil spirits have got uses. And of course, the good spirits, the angels and so forth, rejoice in the uses that they perform for themselves and for their neighbours and the community they're in.
Those in hell, new arrivals, you know, all these different types of people.
There's permissions govern them. The divine permission.
There's just a quote I recall. It talks about the fact that hell fire, you know, so we think of it as torment and, you know, the connotations that go along with that. But Swedenborg talks about the fact that the actual torment is not being able to carry out your evil. And that puts a little bit of a different slant on it, I think.
Yes, it gives a huge frustration.
Yeah, of not being able to carry out fully what you desire.
I'll kill you!
Because it's too selfish focus for that individual.
So for an evil person, hell would be going to heaven.
Yes.
Hang on. To an evil person, hell would be going to heaven,
except and not being able to still be evil.
That's true.
Read The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis. That's a good one.
Okay.
I mean, being totally self-centered and being stuck amongst all these people that are exhibiting goodwill to each other.
Have you actually said what your theory is?
I'm waiting.
Yet?
Okay.
My model,
and it's not a Swedenborg model in a way, but it's my sort of crafted outcome of you know, heaven and hell and redemption. I see heaven because I see all spirits in terms of flux. Because that is internally how it is for us, and I cannot see a graphic changing of that into sort of constancy or huge reduction of that in one sense. So, if you're with me, I see the need for us to, however it is, continue going through, but progressively, and maybe as we were talking earlier about longer periods of what we really love expanding, but we still go through flux. And my theory is that heaven, is the sum total of all those in eternity who at that moment in time are in a heavenly state. Wherever they are, they actually make heaven at that time, at that moment. Mm-hmm. And hell is the sum total of all those who at that moment are actually in a obscure state and a lost it state and a self-centered state, maybe briefly, maybe enduringly, but all those make hell. But each individual is going through flux and change, and it is not place and division, it's actually sum total. And the energy of all that continues, changes and grows and develops, but it makes it the entirety of what we call heaven and hell as different states. But it's actually still one place. So forget your up and down, forget all that differentiation. It's all in what it is now, but fully internally, and heaven is the sum total and hell is the sum total. And that's where I'm currently feeling it's beginning to make sense.
Yeah, you need to feed into that.
Sorry?
You need to feed into that, Julian.
What, right now?
No. Into this idea that we're told that in heaven there are countless myriads of communities of spirits working together. Whether it's the kidney or the heart or the eye and so forth, doing good things, helping each other, and of course you would say that is the heavenly state. You have to fit into that model of the grand man, where the hellish spirits live and operate, and what they do, and how it and how they perform uses.
But through their obscurity,
yes,
still perform a use,
yes,
as being in a hellish state is there to serve a use.
Yes. I mean,